welcome to Magic the Amateuring, episode 62.
I'm glad somebody's counting.
I'm counting.
I'm not.
Great! I'm one of your hosts of Magic the Amateuring, Maria.
I'm another host, Megan. I'm also a bat.
I am the third or first host, depending on which direction you're counting, and my name is Ben.
Wait, but there's no way you're the second host?
No, come on, guys.
Okay.
We're a show for Magic. New players to the game, veterans returning to the game, and people who like laughter and joy and puppies and small beetles.
And speaking of veterans and returning to things, we have a special guest, Matthias Hunt.
I thought we were going to talk about, like, war vets for a second. I was like, this is weird.
Speaking of veterans, Maria is a veteran of the Korean War.
She's back.
Fun fact.
Anyways, Ben, you were saying.
We have special guest Matthias Hunt joining us today.
Hey there, guys. How's it going?
Great.
He's just come back from his own battle at the Pro Tour.
It really was a war.
Before we talk to Matthias, though, I'm going to say what's coming up on the show.
Yeah.
We were obviously talking to Matthias about the Pro Tour, which was PT Born of the Gods modern format. We have For the Noobs for you, talking about scrying. Card of the Week, talking about Born of the Gods draft. We're going to bring back Euphemism of the Week, you guys.
What?
Who's excited?
And we're going to bring it back hard.
So listen for all that coming up. For the Noobs. Scry me a river.
So this week, I thought we could talk about some basic guidelines for when you want to scry a card at the bottom and when you want to leave that shit on top.
Why are we talking about this, Ben?
No reason.
The reason is...
There's a lot of scrying.
There's a lot of scrying in Theros.
There's a lot of scrying. I've been doing a lot of thinking on the subject and practicing.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And just mindlessly picking one and then seeing what happens.
Uh-huh. Have you been like outside of a game of Magic practicing? Like you specifically set up situations when you're where,
like
when
I'll
you're
order lunch
scry.
And I'll be like, I'm just gonna scry this to the bottom.
Yeah, exactly.
Like the tomato. Oh my god, I'm still saying that next time.
Excuse me, sir. Would you like onions on your burger?
I'll just scry to the bottom. What?
So what? So you want your onions underneath your burger?
Don't worry about it.
Well, specifically, recently, Maria and I did a stream, or Maria did a stream, and I watched.
Yeah.
So you're not taking any responsibility?
Well, I mean, I was giving some suggestions in the chat.
Yes,
It was like through a time tunnel.
Yeah, it really was.
There was a bit of lag on the stream. So my suggestions did not always arrive in time before Maria's instincts had taken over.
So I've been doing some streaming. We did a birth stream 2014, Ben and I, on my birthday for 5 hours. And then the other day I just streamed by myself. And it was embarrassing. I lost really bad, but I'm going to continue to stream. And hopefully you guys will as well, my fellow co-hosts.
Oh, sure. Yeah, okay. Probably.
Whatever. You can catch us on twitch.tv/magicTheAmateuring is where our stream will be. But anyway, I made a bad scry, and the chat really...
But that doesn't make you a bad person.
Thank you. I was worried about that.
What was your bad scry?
Well, it was the fact that I had scryed two lands. Uh-huh. So I saw two lands.
She was looking at two lands. It was a read the bones. She was looking at two lands, so she had to decide, do I want to draw two of these lands, one of these lands?
None of these lands.
Or none of these lands.
Right, those are my options.
Right.
In my hand were enough lands to cast all of my stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't technically...
Right, so you had like three lands in play, another land in your hand.
Yep.
And then all four drops or less.
Correct.
Okay.
So what do you think I did, Megan?
I'm guessing since you called it a bad scry, you did what you shouldn't have done.
Good deduction, good. Sherlock.
Nice work. Nice work. You'll make police squad detectives soon enough.
Let's see. So you had enough lands to cast all your things.
I sure did.
Did you scry two lands to the top?
Okay, I'm not that dumb.
Okay. You scryed one land to the top and one land to the bottom.
And guess what happened? Okay.
Did you draw two lands?
So the chat felt the need to say that was bad when scream, no, Maria, what are you doing, you idiot? Yeah. I don't think anybody said idiot. They're all very nice.
But in general, this is, if you're not used to scrying, a good guideline is if you have enough mana and the right colors of mana to cast all your spells, there's no reason to keep a land on the top, usually. Mm-hmm. Obviously, you know, if you have monsters or something you want to activate, then that would be a reason. If you know that you might draw an expensive spell that you want to cast, that might be a reason. But even then...
I was thinking about Shipbreaker Kraken.
Even then, you would rather draw the spell and then later worry about getting the lands, I think. Because, you know, if you draw a spell you can't cast or a land that doesn't do anything, it's basically the same.
Yeah.
Matthias, do you have thoughts on this?
Yes, Matthias.
Well, what's your opinion? I more or less agree with that. It sounds like we're talking about scrying in Limited right now.
Yes,
we are.
Okay, so...
Because we don't know what scrying is like in Constructed.
It's crazy in Constructed. No, I would say for the most part, you just don't want lands in Limited. I kind of try to think about it in a numbers sort of way. So especially when you're talking about with lands and not lands, you could say an unknown card in a draft deck is usually like 0.4 lands, because your deck's about 40% lands. So, like, go with Maria's decision, right? She can either choose to draw two lands by going top-top, she can draw 1.4 lands by going top-bottom, or she can draw 0.8 lands by going bottom-bottom, which, and then if you look at your hand, it's like, well, so even if you scry both cards to the bottom, it's, like, pretty likely you're going to draw a land. So if you're actually in a hand where you want, you know, one land and really that's about it, or maybe two, like, you still probably want to put them both on the bottom there.
Oh my God.
So that's a good rule of thumb. Also, the opposite is usually true. If you have cards in your hand that you can't cast and you're scrying and you see lands that are going to let you cast them, usually you want to keep them. You don't want to be...
Don't get greedy.
You don't want to get greedy and scry them to the bottom and then not be able to cast your spells.
Yeah. Look at this Nessian asp. If only I had 5 mana. But I don't need these forests.
I did have a game recently
where
I had like I had 2 planes. I played one, cast a Loyal Pegasus. I my first land was a scry land, or my second land was a scry land, and I had just 2 white out, and I had all these off color spells I needed to cast in my deck, and I saw another planes. I'm like, nope, bottom. I need the other color, and then I did not draw a third land for the rest of the game.
Oh no.
Wow.
Well, so I never got to cast any of my spells except for one Loyal Pegasus.
But to be fair, if you weren't hitting those other 2 colors, you probably weren't going to win anyway. So
yeah,
it might even
true.
Be okay.
It's true. I don't think it was necessarily wrong, but Fabled Hero is super powerful.
It's what they call a good card.
It could have bought me some time, probably.
Well, I would say, like, in Limited, is I generally just scry cards to the bottom unless they're really sweet. So a lot of times in my Limited decks, I have about 4 or 5 cards that are just better than all the rest of the cards.
Yeah.
You know, it's like you're playing white, and you have that 100-handed one. And if you have a scry two, and you're like, eh, none of these are 100-handed one. So I'll just, like, ship them both to the bottom.
Yeah. I guess some other... Yeah, that's another good general rule of thumb is... If the spell doesn't really seem to do much, like if it doesn't deal with some problem that's on the board, or if you're behind and it doesn't help you get out from being behind, then you probably just want to scry it to the bottom and get something else. It also helps to have some idea of what you want to draw, because if you would just scry everything to the bottom, well, then maybe you should just concede.
Maybe you should have built a different deck.
None of these cards are good.
I will admit, I often play scry spells and tutors without knowing what I want first. It's like, I'll like scry two and I'm like, huh, well, do I want these? Then I have to stop and figure out, like, what do I actually want to draw right now?
Pro player Matthias Hunt, ladies and gentlemen. Sometimes you scry and you just don't know what you want.
So is scrying in Constructed an entirely different conversation?
Well, I think in Constructed, because your deck has so much more redundancy, you know, you're playing 4 of a card, you are oftentimes scrying for a specific card in your deck.
Right.
I would say there's two ways that decks scry. Like a control deck, so blue-white control in Standard, will use its scry lands to try to hit specific answers. Like, I'm going to try to find a Supreme Verdict. I'm scrying everything to the bottom that's not a Supreme Verdict.
Mm-hmm.
There are also decks that are used, and so in that situation, like, especially in blue control, you just play out your scry lands. But there's also these decks that are like Jund or black or like mono black, where these decks need five lands, but like they can't use their sixth land at all. So the scrying actually starts becoming like a draw spell in the decks. You know, once I have five lands in play, like every land I draw is almost like skipping my draw step. Okay. So you actually, if possible, you want to like save your scry lands until you already have five lands in play so that then you, or like four lands in play so that you can play it and like actively not draw another land.
Right, right.
Nice.
Okay, cool. In control decks, do you sometimes want to scry to hit your land drops? Like in a blue deck where you're going to be drawing a lot of extra cards and using all your mana, in the early game, do you want to scry to keep those lands and make sure you hit them all?
I mean, absolutely. Like in blue-white control, like I said, you're scrying to hit a specific card. A lot of times that card is a land. You know, if I have a revelation in my hand, I would like to hit land 8 on turn 8, for example. Right. And unless I'm about to lose the game, like, so I, you know, what card do I want to draw next turn? Unless you're about to kill me, the card I want to draw next turn is probably just another land. That's probably better than, you know, an Azorius Charm or even maybe a Dissolve.
Okay, because if you're playing, for example, Sphinx's Revelation, having another land is basically...
That's another card.
Like having another card.
What I've noticed when I've watched streams and like other players, like much better players than myself playing, is how often they don't settle for a mediocre scry card. Like if they use a scry, sometimes I feel like when I scry, I'm guilty of just being like, oh, sure, like it's a spell, I'll keep it. Even if it's like a like that shitty like a Lagana Band Elder,
like yeah, scry get Band Elder to the top.
It's like oh yeah, sure. It's not a land, so I'll keep it. And I feel like better players that I've watched are like, no, this card isn't good enough. Like this card isn't good right now. It's not what I want.
Yeah.
And it's not an immediate need, but they're like looking farther ahead than I think I do when I'm scrying.
Yeah, it's like the only time I'd want to keep something like Lagana Band Elder would be if I really needed three life, or maybe if I was like being beaten up by a 5/3 and I had three mana next turn, then I might keep him. But I think, so if you put him on the bottom, right, then your next card's just a random card out of your deck, more or less. And it's like, what's better, a random card in your deck or Lagana Band Elder? And it's like, well, the random card is very possibly just better.
Yeah. If you were already ahead, though, say you're winning, you're pretty sure you're going to win. Would you just keep any spell just to make sure that you had another play next turn?
It depends whether I need another play.
Okay.
I think I'm pretty aggressive with my scries both ways. I think when you're ahead, you can be a little safer. Sometimes when you're, say, like, I have more creatures than my opponent and I'm attacking.
Yeah.
Like, all I care about is that my next draw is still another creature.
Yeah.
So as long as, like, I keep spitting out a creature every turn, there's no way I can lose. Then, like, sure, Lagana Band Elder, great. Keep him on top. I'm going to cast him. I don't care. Like, I already have two more attackers and you have blockers. Let's just keep making sure that's the case.
He's got power. He's got toughness. He's on the team.
Yeah. Come on, Lagana Band buddy.
Oh, that guy's so bad.
Cool. Just and saying. Then one more rule of thumb. Say you're in...
Good, I have one more thumb.
Say you're on two lands, you only have two lands, and you cast an Omen Speaker, and you scry, and you see your Shipbreaker cracking there, and he's staring you in the face, and he's saying, Maria, I want to be in your hand. You. I want to be in, on the top of your deck. What do you do?
Bottom that fucker.
Yep.
Yeah, yeah.
Because, I mean, it's just not realistic.
How good's the rare?
It's a Shipbreaker, and it's foil. And it's double foil somehow.
Is there... See...
It's a double foil Shipbreaker foil.
And there's a typo on it, so the casting cost is 2.
If it's Prognostic Sphinx, I'm thinking about drawing.
Yeah, just really?
Yeah, I mean, if there's any... I really like rares, though. Like,
yeah, yeah.
No, you're probably right. The correct thing is to put... Like, it doesn't matter. If you never hit your sixth land, that Shipbreaker Kraken's not really a card.
Yeah, and if you do get behind on land drops, I mean, you might just get so behind that even if you did eventually get enough land somehow to cast that thing, it's not necessarily going to save you.
Well, we all learned something here today.
I sure did.
Yeah.
Pro Tour Born of the Gods.
Whoa.
You guys, this guy sitting right here with us, Matthiasen, was on the Pro Tour Born of the Gods. Do you get fans come up to you like that?
Exactly like that.
Hermagerd.
What was the venue for the Pro Tour? It's not nearly as big as a Grand Prix, right?
The venue was awesome.
It looked like a floating jungle.
The Museum of Arts and Sciences in Valencia, Spain. And it's this really crazy architectural thing with giant water pools next to it. It was very beautiful. I don't know if they posted many pictures of it.
They did. It was online. Awesome.
You should check it out. It was some Pro Tour venues have been kind of not cool, not good, and this was certainly not. This one was great.
Have you ever been to one that was in a strip mall?
I don't think so.
Pro Tour strip mall.
I feel like the Valencia venue looked like the Sydney Opera House if it was in a bathtub.
And it has.
That's fair. Yeah.
Yeah. But it's right. Also it was a little paler. Like everything was a little paler all around it.
Yeah.
Like washed out.
No, just like a faded, like a photo in the sun.
So we're gonna talk
like sepia tone.
No. Damn it, never mind, guys.
I don't know what you're talking about.
This is why we're not a poetry podcast.
Like a modern photo that's been in the sun too long.
Yes.
But not modern because photos are not modern anymore.
Shut up, Ben. Oh my God. So let's keep going.
But not like an old timey photo that your grandpa took and you found in a chest.
Or you took at Valley Fair.
Yeah.
Oh.
Where you got, you know, your sister to pretend to be a prostitute.
Awkward, isn't it?
I think it would be, yeah.
So guys.
Anyway.
This is a modern Pro Tour. We don't know a lot about modern.
Very few sepia tones.
In modern, yeah.
The modern Pro Tour.
Yeah, we haven't talked a lot about modern on this podcast.
Yeah.
So let's just briefly say what it is.
Modern is a constructed format where you can play any card with a modern card frame. So that means the ones with like the boxy card frames, not the really old ones. It would be 8th edition or newer.
Okay.
Mm.
Mm. And random stuff is banned and whatever.
There is a ban list of about 10 or so cards, I think.
Okay.
Yeah, okay.
Nice. So can you tell us, give us a little rundown of What are some decks that happen in Modern?
Well, going into the Pro Tour, so Modern took a big change because they tweaked the ban list just before the Pro Tour.
Yeah.
So previously, Jund had been the best deck in Modern. It made the finals of the last Pro Tour, and it had won a bunch of Grand Prix, and kind of didn't have any deck that beat it with consistency, I would say.
Huh,
there were some decks that could roll with it, but nothing, you know, there wasn't anything that just like beat it up.
Nobody beats Jund. You either join my team or you get out of my way.
This is black, green, white?
Black, green, red.
Black, green, red. Yeah.
So the basic Jund strategy is you play a bunch
of... one mana 3/3.
You play
and then a 2 mana 3/3. And then a 3 mana 4/4.
So in Modern, what Jund was doing is that it was a deck full of 1-for-1 removal and then card draw. And so just like it would rip up your hand, kill all your creatures, and then beat you up with something eventually. But just before the Pro Tour, they banned Deathrite Shaman, which was really slowed down the deck. And then they unbanned Wild Nakatl, which is your 3/3 for 1 that you were talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And that put a lot of people on spot where we weren't really sure what was going to be the best deck at the Pro Tour.
Exciting!
So just to explain why Deathrite Shaman is so good in Modern, as I understand it, is because in Modern, fetch lands are huge. They're lands that you sacrifice, so they go to your graveyard, and then you get to search for another land out of your deck. And Deathrite Shaman lets you exile a land card from your graveyard to add a land. So it basically lets you ramp. And then it also has these two other abilities that either let you gain life or make your opponent lose life if you have creatures or sorceries in the graveyard, in either graveyard.
Yeah, creatures or spells even. I think, so Birds of Paradise, which is a card that's been around since Alpha, is actually a really, really powerful effect in Magic. Being able to have an extra mana source every turn starting on turn 2 is great. The thing that's kept Birds of Paradise, what makes it bad as a card is that if you draw it after turn 1, it's not particularly good.
Right.
Deathrite Shaman, because of all the fetch lands in the format, didn't even have that weakness. This was a Birds of Paradise that any green or black deck could play, and it was good to draw on any turn because of its second and its secondary abilities.
And technically, it couldn't always make you the extra mana, but because the fetch lands are so prevalent in Modern, it basically always could.
It pretty much makes you the extra mana.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Okay, so that was gone.
So that guy was gone. So we weren't really sure what was going to be good. Black had been the
Power
best
Void.
Color.
Yeah, there just was... like when Putin died. Is he dead yet?
Nope. It's still
just
alive.
Like it'll be when Putin died.
Okay.
And we didn't see too many new decks come along, but we saw a lot of kind of repositioning in the format. The deck that won the Pro Tour was Blue White Red Control. That's a deck just full of lots of 1 and 2 mana burn spells, counter spells, and then like Snapcaster Mages to get them back again. But there was, I thought it really opened up the format. There were good combo decks, there were good aggro decks for the first time in a long time, and then there were good control decks. So it was a really open metagame.
Let me ask you, Matthias, what deck you played, because it got quite a lot of attention and was pretty cool.
So I like playing combo decks, and...
Amen, sister.
Sorry, I'm just gonna pause it. Can you just, before you get into what the deck does specifically, like, what does a combo deck mean?
So a combo deck,
it's where you would play a deck and eat some combos.
Oh man,
it has kind
these
of like,
pretzels are making me thirsty, and this powdered cheese is making me throw up.
And it has those what's the? It has bugles in it, like random bugles. And you're like, why is this random bugle in here?
Sounds so good right now, you guys.
Are there random bugles in your bag of combos?
My pizza is sitting on a table downstairs.
Bria, it's gonna be okay.
Oh god,
it's gonna be okay.
So
you can't like own a pizza, man.
As you print lots and lots of magic cards, it inevitably happens that some of them are going to interact in ways that you didn't really plan them to, and they're going to do something stupid. Rather than trying to win through attacking or through like reacting to your opponent's spells, combo decks usually are playing cards that do very specific things with each other to produce a really powerful effect. Yeah. I think like one of the earliest combo decks, there was this card called Illusions of Grandeur, which was an enchantment that when you played it, you gained 20 life, and when it left play, you lost 20 life. And you had to pay more mana for it every turn. It had cumulative upkeep. So, like, that card doesn't sound that good right now, right? You know, it's like a temporary big life gain.
Yeah.
Well, there was a card called Donate, which let you give away one of your cards to someone else. So you'd gain 20 life, and then you'd give it to your opponent, and eventually
make
they...
them deal with it.
And eventually they couldn't pay for it, and when they couldn't pay for it, they'd lose 20.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Another early combo was Channel and Fireball, right?
Right. That's how Channel Fireball actually got its name.
What?
That was the turn one kill that's there in Alpha. You Channel is a card that's they probably would never make again. It lets you pay a life to make a mana. So you'd pay 19 life, make 19 mana, and then you'd play maybe a couple lands and cast a 20-point Fireball at your opponent.
Wow.
The real broken part of that deck is Channel. Channel is really not a reasonable card.
Yeah. Channel's unreasonable. And then also the fact that there were all the, you know, Black Lotus and Dark Ritual and Moxes and stuff meant that you probably could do that shit on turn one if you really wanted to.
Yeah, there's a bunch of things you can do in Vintage, the only format that lets you play Moxes, that are completely unfair.
Yeah.
I just don't understand why people would play Vintage if this kind of stuff is what's going on.
Well, the answers to it are similarly powerful. Just everybody, I mean, if you ever play a game of Vintage, the things that people are doing, like, it only somewhat feels like Magic with all the rules you're breaking.
And so Modern was kind of designed to solve a lot of those problems because a lot of those really broken cards are very old.
Right.
And with the ban list, they're able to ban some of the most powerful effects that would just warp the format otherwise.
Yeah, Legacy used to be the all cards legal format,
right.
And it still is. We still play it at the Star City Games Opens. Mm-hmm. But one of the problems is that Magic's gotten so popular and the cards are getting so rare that for newer players, it's really hard to play Legacy.
Yeah, yeah.
For example, the lands you need to play Legacy could cost you upwards of $1,000 for your deck right now.
Yeah.
If you want to get all the lands for any deck.
Yeah.
So... and long ago, Wizards made a deal with dealers that they wouldn't reprint really old cards so that people could invest in cards and not have, you know, so that dealers wouldn't get financially destroyed.
Yeah.
So all the cards in Modern are cards that Wizards could reprint. So this is a format where they can ban and unban things as needed and they can continue to reprint cards.
Right.
It's like Modern Masters?
Like Modern Masters, exactly. And I think it's probably good. There's some cards in Legacy that will always be legal that are also probably too good. So Modern's interesting. It's been this experiment that Wizards has been doing, and I think it's a really fun format.
So let's talk about combo decks today, or Modern combo decks, if you will. There's usually you're usually trying to combine two or three different cards that create an effect so powerful that you're either going to win the game on the spot or it's going to become unwinnable for your opponent.
Exactly. So the premier combo in Modern is Splinter Twin. Okay. This is a 4-mana enchantment. It's 2 colors, 2 red, that gives a creature an ability to tap and put a token copy of itself into play with haste, and the token dies at the end of its turn. And you put it on, there's about three creatures that you can put it on, which will cause you to win. All of them will, when they come into play, untap something. So, like, say, Pestermite. It's a 2/3 that untaps something. You'd have it make a copy of itself. Then that copy untaps the original one. Then the original makes another copy, untaps, and it makes as many copies as you want. All the copies have haste, and you just kill your opponent.
So that's an example of a 2-card combo. Exactly. Basically, if you can get both of those cards online, unless your opponent can deal with it right away, you're going
to
win.
Right. They have to have something like... Yeah, they have to either kill this Pestermite. They sometimes can do cute things like cast a Rakdos charm at you after you make, 100 Pestermites.
Ouch. Yeah. I have a question, though. So if you're playing against that deck, do you just have to keep a hand that you know that can deal with that?
Right. So playing against combo decks can be very strange. You need to have cards that interact with what they do, or you need to just kill them before they do what they're trying to do.
Okay.
Ugh. So, like, Splinter Twin, they can't... That enchantment is 4.
The enchantment is 4. So something that the card... Like, for example, Spellskite sees a lot of play in Modern because it's a 0/4 wall, but it also can make target spells have new targets. So if they try to cast Splinter Twin, you'll just instead move the Splinter Twin off their Pestermite and onto your own Spellskite, so they won't get to make their... Get the aura on the creature.
Right.
So, but not all decks will be able to play stuff like that... Because it won't be the right colors or whatever.
And... Yeah. Spellskite's colorless, but there certainly are some decks that have no interest in playing a 0/4 for 2 mana. Control's fine with it, but to say, your burn deck, for example, really would prefer to not play that card.
Yeah. But you will all of these decks bring it in if they're playing against Splinter Twin?
Any deck that has it and it's 75, I would guess would bring in all their Spellskites, yes.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
Nice. So tell us about specifically the combo deck that you are playing.
So I was playing a pretty new deck to the format. This deck is, I think it's now being called Titan Pact. It was what's picked up for. It revolves around Summer Bloom, which is a 2-mana sorcery that says you may play 3 additional lands this turn.
Okay.
Now...
pretty disgusting.
Seems good.
It's good. Well, normally, if you put that in your normal deck, you'd run across the problem that you don't really have 3 more lands to play.
Right.
Unless
you already kept a 5-lander.
5-land Summer Bloom, sure.
Unless you scryed them to the top.
Right. Unless you scryed all the lands to the top.
Turn 3, Read the Bones. Turn 4, Summer Bloom.
So where this deck gets its advantage is it plays these old lands from Ravnica that make 2 mana. They come into play tapped. And when they come into play, you return a land from play to your hand. So it's like they're only making one mana. And they come into play tapped. But it lets your hand have, quote-unquote, more lands in it without actually having more lands.
Okay, yeah. Because then if you, say you played an Explore, you could play one of these bounce lands, return some other land that was tapped to your hand. Now you can play that land again.
Exactly.
And then if you have another bounce land, you could even do it again.
Right, so when I play this Summer Bloom, it's not unreasonable that I have 3 more land drops I can make.
Okay.
In fact, one of the quote-unquote combos in the deck is you just play Summer Bloom on turn 2, play 3 more lands, and then on turn 3 you play a Primeval Titan.
Ouch!
And unless they're playing counter spells, that can be really difficult for them to answer.
Yeah, so in that deck, the 5 land Summer Bloom hand's probably pretty good, probably a keeper.
As long as you have something to play on 6 mana, it's probably good.
Okay.
The deck does play 28 lands, so there is that.
That's a lot of lands.
So
have you ever played a deck with more lands than that?
I have played a deck with more lands in it. I played a deck with, I think, upwards of around 40 lands in it. So that was also a combo deck. Surprise! So sometimes combo decks really don't look like Magic card decks.
Because there's also combo decks that have 0 lands in them.
There was a deck... called
the Ornithopter deck.
Yeah.
If you are into your history of Magic, there was a deck called Seismic Swans. One incarnation of it.
That is a great name!
It had a card called Seismic Assault, lets you discard a land to deal two to an opponent. And then there was a card called Treasure Hunt, that it's two mana sorcery, and you basically reveal cards off the top of your deck, and you draw until you hit a non-land. So you could see how those together, if you're playing like 40-some-odd lands, can actually deal a lot of damage to your opponent.
Where's the Swans, though?
That's a card called Swans of Bryn Argol, which actually can let you draw your... That actually, without going through the whole loop, that's a card that would let you draw your entire deck in one turn, if you had a Seismic Assault in play.
I just thought it was like a swan, and then the swan was really fat, and then the swan, like...
caused an earthquake.
Yeah. Boom! Swan Quake! Somebody make the deck Swan Quake. It uses Swan Song.
Yeah, and Earthquake.
And Earthquake.
Yeah.
Nice.
Zero card Earthquake.
Yeah.
So your deck also had, like, one of the linchpins of it was Amulet of Vigor, right?
Yep.
So what does that do?
Yeah, so I know. Explain. Going through the whole deck is going to be pretty hard. What Amulet of Vigor does is it says when a permanent enters the battlefield tapped, you untap it under your control.
Which, so that's good for your Ravnica lands?
It's really good for those Ravnica lands. Suddenly you get to make... They basically come into play untapped.
So then instead of having a drawback where you have to bounce land and then you don't get to tap them for mana right away... Right. Now you get to bounce a land, and then you get to tap them right away.
Exactly. And it actually can get more gross than that. When I said you could play three more lands in one turn, instead of bouncing a different land, you can just use that bounce land to bounce itself. So you would play it, untap it, make mana, bounce itself, play it, untap it, make mana, bounce itself. And you just do it many times in one turn, and suddenly you'd have a lot of mana in one turn.
Wow. So... Then casting Explorer is like casting a double Dark Ritual.
Yeah. Once all the pieces line up, this deck's doing some things that are really not within the rules of Magic.
You were doing really, really well on the Pro Tour in day one, and you were on coverage.
Yeah.
And I recall the hosts being very confused by watching you play this deck. They're like, yes. I don't even know what's happening.
So this deck is one of the harder decks to play. I believe there were 4 players at the Pro Tour playing it. I was playing it. Andres Prost was playing it. There was one guy I didn't know who I saw playing it. And the last player playing it was Stanislav Sifka, who, if you remember, he'd won the previous Modern Pro Tour playing Second Sunrise combo, which is an equally ridiculous deck to play. The deck is really hard. I think I had to spend the entire week practicing it. And actually, in one of my feature matches, I messed up the combo at one point. Mainly because there's so many different ways you can sequence things. Like, you have extra land drops, you have which land you bounce, what land you find.
I would think just keeping track, like, usually...
Oh, God.
It's not that hard to keep track of your land drops because you just play one land a turn. But now that you can play multiple lands a turn and you're returning lands to your hand, I can't... Like, how did you even keep track of that?
So, I have a set of dice that I use. I use this for lots of combo decks. I have a die of every color, white, blue, black, red, green, and then I have a sixth one that's a brown one. And so what I would do is I'd put the brown one on 4 when I played Summer Bloom, meaning that's how many lands I have left to play.
I got 4 land drops.
Okay. I have 4 land drops left. And then every time I made mana, I would put the other dice out, and as I spent it, I would like tick them up or down.
Okay, sure.
Oh my God. So I remember Rich Hagen, who was one of the members of the coverage team, saying that you had made a list of like mental shortcuts to be able to play this deck.
Yeah, you can't really... Sometimes you'll normally picture out a turn before you make the turn happen. You can't really picture out an entire turn with this deck because so many things happen in one turn. Like, you can't be like, all right, I'll play this land, untap it, retap it, make this. You know, you have to be like, okay, I played this land, it's 2 mana. You know, you have to have some shortcuts when playing it. Otherwise you'll just spend too long. Like, you'll get a slow play warning.
Yeah.
Right, because normally you can just count the lands you have in play and be like, that's how much mana I have to use.
Right.
In this deck, it's like you need to use an algebraic formula just to calculate that, essentially.
If you had an abacus, would that be legal?
I mean, that's essentially what the dice are, right?
I do own an abacus. I hadn't thought about bringing it. I do think it would be legal.
You should show up with it. Just like, don't worry about it. This is my combo abacus. I'll tell you when you're dead.
That's kind of what it felt like, sort of, when I watched you playing. It's kind of like, don't worry about it. I'll tell you when you're dead. Yeah. Like, it really did.
So a lot of times what especially at the pro level, what people will do when they're playing against someone who's taking, you know, a 10-minute turn or something, is they don't know how the combo deck works, but what they want, they'll try to do is they will hawk me, as they should, to make sure that I'm not breaking any rules. You know, they want me to explain every step.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And what they'll do is sometimes they'll get out a piece of paper and they'll track my mana while I'm going to make sure I don't screw up.
Which that makes a lot of sense, because if you don't understand the combo, and you might as well learn it.
Someone could just cheat you.
I mean, to be fair, when I played, like, I don't think many people knew what was going on. I played against both Ben Stark and Gabriel Nassif, who are pretty big names, and neither of them really knew what I was doing. Right. They knew the gist of it. They knew that I was trying to
they
play.
They knew something bad
They knew
was
that
coming.
I was playing Bounce Lands, Primeval Titan, Amulet of Vigor, and Summer Bloom, but they didn't really.
Yeah.
They didn't really know the whole list, or like, oh, what's he going to go get with this Titan? And they're like, I don't know, some stuff that's probably bad for me. Right. Yeah. And that's actually an advantage to playing this deck. This deck had not been around. It had been around before the bannings, but no one had touched it because the deck was very, very bad against Jund.
Oh, okay.
What made it so bad against Jund?
Well, it's actually very, very bad against any deck that plays Thoughtseize.
Thoughtseize, I see.
Right.
Because in the combo deck, you're trying to assemble some number of pieces. In this case, about 3 pieces.
Yeah.
And then if I have Thoughtseize, I can just take one of your pieces away, and now you're in trouble.
Yeah, there's a lot of different kinds of combo decks. Some of them are trying to do like an A plus B combo, like Splinter Twin. And I think Amulet would be an A plus B deck too.
Okay.
The second kind of combo deck is what I call an engine combo deck. If you've ever watched Storm or Elf combo in Legacy, these are ones where like every single card does the same thing and it's completely wacky. Like so the A plus B Thoughtseize is really good against. And the problem with my Amulet deck is that I don't have, if you take a piece of my combo, I don't have a lot of ways to go find another copy. Right, so, I just have to hope to draw it.
So an example would be if I took away your Summer Bloom.
Yeah, I might have kept a hand that was an Amulet of Vigor, a Summer Bloom, a Bounce Land, a Primeval Titan, and like one other land. Mm-hmm. And if you take my Summer Bloom, now all I have is 3 mana and this Primeval Titan. And so it's like, wow, this is going to be problematic.
Yeah.
Yeah. So one of the more, just mean ways that your deck had to win, I just want to mention briefly, because, you got to watch it happen once on camera, so you can go back and watch this in the Pro Tour archive, but you were also playing a card called Hive Mind.
Yeah.
And which is a card, it's a 6 mana, and it says, anytime you cast an instant or sorcery, your opponent casts a copy of that spell as well.
Whenever anyone casts a spell, everyone gets a copy.
So if your opponent plays a lightning bolt or whatever, you get a lightning bolt and you get to choose.
You get a lightning bolt.
Everybody gets a lightning bolt.
Everybody gets a lightning bolt.
And you get to choose new targets for or whatever.
Right, and you don't have a choice. You have to get you get a lightning bolt. It's not can have a lightning bolt.
It's you get one. And so
and that's going to be relevant here, because I'm going to cast some spells that you'd rather not have.
you were playing several packs. And these pacts, there was Summoner's Pact, Pact of Negation, and Slaughter Pact. And these are cards with 0 in their casting cost. And so you cast this card for 0, but on the card it says, if you do not pay, you know, whatever during your upkeep, you lose the game.
Those cards were designed to have what the R&D called super haste. It was like, not only does this card have haste, it's so fast that you pay for it the next turn.
It was from that time.
Oh, really?
It was from that time travel block, right?
Yeah.
What is it? I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's from the time travel
block. So the idea was, the idea was you cast it now and then you pay for it later.
That's really
There's
hilarious.
An unglued card called Rocket Powered Slug that was actually exactly like a pact.
But the way they made it, the way they set it up to work was, if you don't pay that cost later, you just lose
the game.
Like if you go forwards in time and
you haven't been born yet.
Right.
You create a paradox.
Then you die.
Yes.
And paradoxes, you can't have a paradox, so you lose the game.
Yeah. So like Slaughter Pact is 2 and a black on your upkeep. Summoner's Pact is 2 colorless, 2 green.
Slaughter Pact is the card Dark Banishing, for example. It just destroys a non-black creature for 3 mana, but you just have to pay for it later.
Mm. Yep, Summoner's Pact allows you to go fetch a green creature out of your deck and put it into your hand.
Yep.
And then Pact of Negation just counters.
So there's two cool ways to use these. One, if they're in your deck and you never have another turn, the whole pay for
because
it next,
you win.
Because you win, the whole pay for it next turn thing, well, you kind of get around that.
Yeah.
But with you were saying with Hive Mind, what you do is, well, I will just start I'll get this Hive Mind in play, and I'll start casting lots of pacts. Like, more than I can pay for, because you'll cast them too. And so maybe there's this card that wants you to pay 2/2 green mana during your upkeep or lose the game. Well, your like blue control deck that plays no forests really shouldn't be playing that spell because you're not going to be able to pay for it.
You really shouldn't
have paid it.
So this is the modern version of like, why are you hitting yourself?
Yeah, well, so Hive Mind does a second thing here too, which is that once a Hive Mind's in play, counter spells stop working. So say you're like, what if I just counter my own green pact so that you don't actually cast it? Say if you ever play a counter spell, well, you'll play your counter spell. I'll get a copy of the counter spell and I'll counter your counter spell. So once a Hive Mind is in play, counter spells stop working.
But you do have to have a target for your Pact of Slaughter, your Pact of Negation, right?
Yeah, Pact of Slaughter, Pact and Pact of Negation do need targets, so there'd have to be a creature in play if I want to use them. Summoner's Pact doesn't have that problem, which is
because you just
nice.
Search for a green creature from your deck.
Yeah, there's the words target don't show up in the rules text.
Which they may or may not even have one, just to add insult to losing.
I cast Summoner's Pact. You have to cast Summoner's Pact. Why don't you go find a green creature?
I did play. Oh gosh, what was my opponent playing?
It'd be good if you could find a creature.
I want to say it was Living End.
Yeah.
And I pulled off a pact against him, a green pact, and he couldn't pay for it. But what he did is when I cast the green pact, he went through his deck and he got a Deadshot Minotaur and showed it to me and put it in his hand, and then he conceded.
He
resolved it. He's like, no, I'm going to find a green creature.
Just on principle.
Yeah, well, you know, he cast the pact.
Yeah.
So just so everybody knows, how did you end up doing?
I went 10-6, which ironically is how I've done it like all my pro tours recently. I did it in a way cooler fashion this time by winning all of them at the beginning, so I got to be on coverage.
What were you going in today too? What was your
rank? I was 7-1, so that means I went 3-5 on the second day, which was unfortunate. But I still finished in 61st place, so I did get
awesome.
I did finish
nice
in the
work.
Money for the tournament, so that was really cool.
Nice work.
High five. Mm-hmm.
Boom.
Come on, hit it. Right. You like patted it.
I'm right next to you. It's hard.
Okay. Cool.
Nice. Yeah. So if you would like to check out that deck in action, you can go to the Pro Tour Day One coverage archive and check it out there. You also streamed for the Meadery last week.
Yep.
And I believe that is archived.
Yep, it's archived. I do streams every Wednesday evening there. So at least this. Well, by the time this is up, I probably will have already done it. But I've been doing Amulet or Pact Titan on stream quite a bit because a lot of people have been curious about the deck.
Mm. Sweet. So that's twitch.tv/TheMeadery if you would like to check that out.
And you also did a tournament report that's on the Meadery as well, right?
Yeah, there's a tournament report there. And there should also be on Star City Games, there's a primer of how the heck do you play this deck.
So good luck, guys.
Yeah. Let us know how that goes.
Godspeed. Cards of the week.
Megan, are you still with us?
Yes, I'm
you
here.
You sound like a stroke.
I'm here.
She's fading in and out of reality.
She's in and out of phase. I was just remembering, you guys, we haven't done Card of the Week for a while.
Yeah, I think it was because of all the temporal anomalies it created.
That's true.
This happened every time that we tried to.
I think it's worth the risk, though, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It is a good segment.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Born of the Gods has been out for a while, so let's talk about some new Born of the God cards that we have been getting to like.
Yeah. My card of the week is Loyal Pegasus.
Oh.
I opened a Born of the Gods sealed pool that had 3 copies of Loyal Pegasus.
Oh my god.
Wait, one of them had to be foil, right?
No.
Because you only get 2 Theros boosters.
No.
You get 3 and 3.
You get 3 and 3. I thought it was 4 and 2 for some reason.
My bad,
keep going.
Yeah, this was in a release queue online, and I got 3 of those. I also had... like 2 Dauntless Onslaughts and double retraction helix and double like skirmisher, and it was just an absurd deck. And I did win a game by playing three loyal Pegasus or Pegasi and then like casting Dauntless Onslaught on them. So you can, it can happen to you. Live the dream.
Live the Pegasus dream, guys.
Yeah.
Live it.
Cool. My card of the week is Servant of Tiamat.
Timuret.
I say it wrong every single time. I shouldn't say it wrong because it's my card of the week.
It's okay.
Servant of Tiamat.
Timuret.
So it's like Timuret. Servant of Termite. Servant of Timurite. Fuck. Anyway, he's a 1/3 that when he untaps, he is inspired. You gain and drain. Which is copyright. Which you gain one life and your opponent loses one life. And he's my card of the week because I played him in my stream the other night. And while I did not play him well, I still think he was very solid and better than I thought he would be.
He can also regenerate for 3 mana.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that.
Which just means if you have a lot of mana, he gives you a lot of options because you can just block stuff forever. Also, when he does block and regenerate, if he would have been killed, he will tap because of that. Mm-hmm. And then you get to untap and drain for one. So he's like a very slow, grindy card, which is perfect if you have some kind of control deck that can make use of that.
Right. Mm-hmm. And in draft, we're getting one last card of Theros, so we don't have as many chances to pick up Return Phalanx or that kind of thing. And while he's not a Return Phalanx, I still think that he's better than
I was going to say, I think he's better than Return Phalanx.
Do you really?
Oh, yeah.
I've heard a lot of people say that this card is better than they initially thought it was.
I think, right now, at least, when preparing for the PT, we had that as the second best black common in Born of the Gods.
What's the best?
Asphyxiate is probably better.
Oh.
The kill spell. But this guy is really good.
Okay, I'm glad I feel vindicated.
Yeah.
All right.
He blocks a lot of kind of the random heroic two drops that decks love to play. Trades with a decent amount of the three drops, and then in the late game, when you have the mana to regenerate them, he also slows a lot of other stuff down and makes and will often make attacks basically unprofitable just because he can block and regenerate and drain for one.
Yeah, draining for one is really, I mean, it's a 2-point life swing that's like pretty powerful. And yeah, I'm at the point where I think I'd even play him in black aggressive decks.
Ooh.
Nice.
Bold words.
You could put an ordeal on him. It'd be really good.
So he's pretty good. He's pretty good against the heroic decks because he'll slow down the small attackers, like we said. But then also, if he does ever get to drain you, well, now that's life that you're gaining that your opponent, like, now your opponent doesn't just have to do 20. They have to do 24 or 25, something like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, good point.
So I'm going to go for a rare. A rare that
reach for the stars.
I reached for the stars. I got to play with the Forge Stoker Dragon the other day. He's the red.
Oh, he's a red promo card.
I believe so. He's a red 6-drop. He costs 4 red. He's a 5/4 flyer, and he has when
he attacks, has something against blocking.
Yeah, he's really got an issue with it. when he attacks, you can pay 1 and a red to deal 1 damage. To a creature, and that creature can't block this turn. But what's awesome about it is that there's no limit on how many times you can do that when he attacks, or how many times you can target a creature. So basically, once he attacks, you already paid 6 to cast him. If you're heavy red, I mean, you can, in theory, deal up to, like, 4 damage to your opponent's creatures, and get in a swing with this 5/4 flyer.
Right, because he's already a flyer, so he's already not going to be blocked very often.
Exactly.
But if your opponent does have, flyers just to chump block with,
you could
swing past them for the win with this ability. But can also just say, okay, I'm going to kill, your 3/3, and then next turn I'm going to kill your, two of your 1/1s or something.
Exactly, and that was probably the most awesome part of it, was just being like, oh, I can attack in the air, and I don't have to worry. Like, maybe I should have been worrying about blocking. Yeah. But it's like, no, I can just kill off one of your creatures. And
it's like he's carrying a BB gun, and he's just kind of like, who wants it? Who wants it?
And he does say, I mean, it's kind of a... He can only use the ability while he's attacking, right?
That's true.
So there is that drawback, but really, this effect is so powerful that
you're gonna
be able to use it a large majority of the time. My theory is that his dad was killed by a blocker, and that's why he's got something against him.
Yes, I would agree. That's why he's a forge stoker. Like, the forge and the heat in the forge is his hatred for blockers, and he's stoking that fire.
Yeah, he's stoking really just
raking
his
it
mom.
Up.
It's a vicious circle.
She killed herself really after the dad died to that blocker.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was really a rough tragedy.
She was one day away from retirement, too.
I know.
Matthias, you have any Born of the Gods card of the week?
I think my card of the week, I'll go back to the limited cards, would probably be Noble Quarry.
Ooh.
That guy has been really underrated.
That card is a sauce boss.
That card's very strong. I know I'm going to hurt my own value here. I'm still getting that guy like fifth, sixth pick on Moto.
Yeah, I've gotten that card way late.
So I think it looks a little weak. This is it's a 1/1 for 3.
Unicorn.
Bestows for 6. And it has the effect that everybody has to block it.
Creature type unicorn.
Unicorns have, there's like a lot of unicorns that do that, I guess. Yeah.
Do only unicorns do that?
No, there's some other cards.
Haunting Elf.
It's called a lure effect. There was an enchantment called Lure that would give any creature this ability. And so now we basically have a bestow card that has Lure.
So is there any unicorn that does not have Lure?
Opaline Unicorn.
Good night. I'm going to retire from this podcast.
I think why I really like this card is I think everybody sees that, like, when you play it on 6 mana, there's sometimes you can blow someone out. You know, like, put it on your really big creature and then you eat all their blockers.
Yeah.
But what I've actually started, like, doing, what I've really liked about the card is a lot of the bestow cards suffer from the effect that, like, the guy they leave behind isn't particularly good unless you enchant him. Like, Hopeful Eidolon's a really good card, but when he dies, all you get is this 1/1 lifelink. That's not very exciting. But a 1/1 lure is a really powerful card, even just by itself. It can get all the rest of your creatures through on one attack.
Right.
So Noble Quarry is, like, it's a full 2 cards. I've had a lot of games where it's, like, I've had, you know, maybe a Nessian Asp in play, right? And you can monstrous it. You just put Noble Quarry on your other guy. Suicide him, swing the Nessian Asp. Asp hits for 8. Next turn, you suicide the horse and swing Nessian Asp again. Now they've taken 16. You probably can just kill them.
Because usually Lure is only good if it's going to let you get in for a lethal swing, right?
Right.
Like, I've got enough damage between my other creatures that I can attack with this guy. You have to block it with everything, and then I just kill you. But here, now you only need, like, half a lethal swing because you can do it twice in a row.
Right.
Oh, that's interesting.
Or if they've played some problem creature, it's kind of a poor man's asphyxiate, right? Because you can put it on something, they're forced to block with their creature, with their bomb creature, whatever it is, their prognostic sphinx or whatever, and then you can take that out, or you can take out, you know, 3 of their random creatures and kind of just destroy their board for one creature.
Did I not have any cards in my hand? I'm giving you a prognostic sphinx shit. Because you said if they make you block with you make them block with the prognostic sphinx. But they can only do that, like, why would I block my prognostic sphinx? I'm just gonna discard it and tap it.
All right.
Yeah, that's fair.
All right.
We were all staring.
Well said.
I was with you.
You were all
like, you can tap it. You thought,
excuse me, did I not have any cards in my hand?
You're gonna be like,
what was I doing?
I knew exactly what you were talking about, but it didn't seem like you did for sure. So
I just wanted to look at you.
Aw, thank you.
You're real pretty.
Thanks, Maria. I haven't showered in 3 days.
You heard it here first. Check the Twitter feed at MTAcast for updates.
All right, Maria, you look like you have some euphemisms of the week drop on our ears.
Ben is the one who said he had a euphemism of the week.
Oh, Ben, let's hear it. Oh, I just thought of one.
Okay, good.
My euphemism of the week is hold at bay, which is when you take someone to San Francisco and you just hold each other.
My euphemism of the week is spiteful returned. Which is any ex who feels like they were dumped unjustly and comes back to wreck your life in any fashion. Spiteful returned.
I have another euphemism of the week. Loyal Pegasus. That's a boner you can't get rid of.
My loyal Pegasus.
You just follows you me around.
You need another creature to get rid of it.
It's going
to
make it really hard to play with these cards.
You're welcome.
I broke up with Kathy last week. I'm really afraid she's going to be a spiteful return.
Yeah, she totally seems like a man.
Yeah. But on the other hand, ever since she's left, I've totally had a loyal Pegasus.
I love using them in a sentence.
Can I have a country of origin, please?
Loyal Pegasus, they're all Greek. They're all Greek in this case.
Well, everybody, that's our show.
Yeah.
I just want to give you guys a heads up that we have a website, magicktheamateuring.com, which you can find.
Just so you're aware.
Shut up. I'm going to say something else.
Just so you've been warned.
You can find all our old episodes on that website.
Yep.
And I also put up a little donate button on there because Team MTA is looking for a new microphone. And it'd be great if you guys have a little extra cash rolling around in your PayPal account.
The old microphone is haunted.
It is.
And it electrocutes us when we record in the bathtub.
Which is every episode.
Splash.
Splish, 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 splish. So yeah, that's just, if you feel so inclined, head on over to magicktheamateuring.com. It's right on the front page. Check us out on iTunes. You can follow us, subscribe there. You can subscribe on Stitcher. Check us out on themeadery.org. That's MEADERY, as in the drink mead, where you can also find a lot of Matthias's streams and articles and picture and home address.
Pretty much everything.
And his long-form birth certificate.
Plus Harry, as in Harry Potter.
Now you are screwing people up.
I'm sorry.
No, we would love for you to follow us on Twitter at MTAcast. We're trying to get to 500 followers, and we're nearly there.
We're almost there, and then we'll make some shirts.
Make some shirts and give them out.
Give them out. How about that?
You can also follow us on twitch.tv at twitch.tv/magicktheamateuring.
/magicktheamateuring.
No, just put it all in one word. See what happens.
And this week, the same very day that this podcast comes out, we're going to be on the Deck Tease, which is another magic podcast where we were interviewed. So after you listen to this, download the Deck Tease, listen to us some more. You'll have so much of us up in your head holes, you won't know what to
do. Damn it! Their ears!
You can also find us on Magic Online if you want to. My username is Middle Schooler. Send me a note. Say hi.
I'm horny_unicorny.
And I am Ice Cream Socialist.
Matthias, if people want to follow your stuff, what's the best way for them to reach you?
I am MTG Matthias on Twitter and Twitch and Magic Online.
Sweet.
Oh, one-stop shop. Consistency. One-stop shop.
That's what makes him a pro. I planned it that way.
Thanks so much for joining us, Matthias.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
It's great to have you on and give some real knowledge instead of all the fake knowledge we drop.
Simulated, recycled knowledge like the air in the space station.
Yep, exactly like that.
For now, listeners, good night and good luck.